Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, you didn't think we'd be gone for long, did you? We are back after a little bit of a hiatus. I'm your host, Smith Brickner, on the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network for another edition of the Baseball Prospectus Top Prospect Podcast Series. And joining me as my co-host yet again is my colleague, Jeffrey Panonastro. And Jeffrey, I have been bogged down with corporate America obligations. You have been bogged down with prospecting obligations, but safe to say that the holiday season doesn't feel like it's fully kicked in for either of us yet.
It's not quite the night before Christmas, but it's almost the night before Christmas, and all through the house, I'm just sitting here clicking my mouse. So yeah,
That's the life of a prospect evaluator, a prospect writer. But hey, we signed up for it. We love it.
And, a man, you know, who has his two major book deadlines on Christmas Eve and New Year's Day. Yeah.
Really, really great planning all around, I have to say. But hey, we get to talk about one of the best farm systems in baseball today, the Los Angeles Dodgers. So that'll be fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fascinating to me because we always think that the best teams, generally speaking, should have loaded major league rosters and subpar farm systems for obvious reasons.
Drafting late, et cetera, yeah.
That's not the case.
More willing to trade prospects, too, yeah.
More willing to trade prospects. And yet, the Dodgers sit atop. They're right there with the New York Mets as, and I cannot believe I'm saying that. They are right
They're not right there with the New York Mets on payroll anymore.
But talent-wise, I think you can make the case they are right there with the Mets. And they have a much better farm system than the Mets. Yeah. So they stand to be in a very good position, and given, I think, the spending that we've seen throughout this offseason, which has been bonkers, they seem pretty well positioned to be a prime spender next year while also remaining very competitive with a good farm system this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be annoying if you're a fan of another team in the NL West. I mean, it's really annoying if you're a Giants fan this week. But
yeah.
Just generally
not a great
speaking,
week.
I don't... So it's funny. I did this list back-to-back with the Royals, which I didn't. I just put together a schedule for this year. And there's some real whiplash there, obviously. Yeah. But in some ways, the Dodgers list is incredibly boring to research and write, as good as this system is, because it's the exact same kind of pitcher. And they're so good at maximizing their arms at this point, like comically so.
Yeah.
Like, but as I was going down the list, I make a joke about it towards the end in the Peter Hubick blurb. It's like Michael Keaton in Multiplicity. It's like the same guy, but it's just slightly, you know, the stuff's not quite as good down the line. The strike throwing is not quite as good down the line. But the outline of the same pitcher is there. Very analytically friendly stuff. Usually two plus flashing breaking balls. You'll mix in guys with the elite changeups in there. You know, Ryan Pepio and Gavin Stone. And it's just like, yeah, it's kind of boring because you're just writing the same blurb over and over again, just slightly shorter and slightly less effusive. And the bats, really outside of Miguel Vargas, it's just guys that have completely maximized their, like, swing outputs, I will say, specifically.
Yeah.
They're guys that, like, Dalton Rushing is a good example of this, and we'll get to all these guys in more detail. But Dalton Rushing does this. James Outman does it. Even Alex Freeland, their third-round pick this year. They're going to hit the ball hard. Their swing isn't going to allow for elite zone contact, but it's going to allow for good enough zone contact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're not going to chase too much. They all have good approaches. And the vast majority of the balls they hit are going to come between 15 degrees and 25 degrees degree launch angle. And it's just, like, so boring.
It's boring that they are producing as many yes. sixes as they are.
Yes. I think the OFP 55s down here probably go, I don't even know. Close to, you know, I don't, like, Ronan Kopp is the first, you know, no, more than that. Ronan Kopp, I think, is the first one. I'm like, he's not a 55.
Wow. Okay.
It might even, like, it's, you can start thinking about it with Eddie's Leonard, and I think it's definitely by the time you get down to Ronan Kopp somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Which is
just,
I mean, it's such a deep system. And we'll, again, when we get into this, they aren't actually hitting on a lot of their high draft picks yet either.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're so good at identifying talent, and that allows you to find players in non-obvious ways
mm-hmm.
later in the draft.
Yep.
So that's where the Yankees and the Dodgers have thrived.
Yeah, very, very similar. I was having a conversation with a scout about this recently, and I don't know. This is like a half-baked theory when I was in the midst of doing this Dodgers list, but someone like Emmett Sheehan, for example, not a particularly good pitcher at BC.
Yeah.
Drafted in, you know, a day two. The Dodgers make a lot of these picks. The Yankees certainly make a lot of these picks too. The Rays, some other teams. You know, a day two college pick, good stuff, never really put it together, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you watched video from Emmett Sheehan this year or saw him live, you're wondering, how did this guy post a higher than 4 ERA for Boston College? No, it's a good conference, but it's just dominant stuff. And I was thinking about it and having a conversation with a scout about, like, I'm getting, like, deep into the weeds and draft stuff. And I do wonder, like, the Dodgers clearly have a system, right, for what they want mm-hmm. their arms to do. And I do wonder if these kind of pitchers, like, you know, Emmett Sheehan, you know, Gavin Stone was a reliever in college.
Yeah.
For the most part. I think actually for his entire college career. And he was a reliever at Central Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah, no shade on Central Arkansas, per se. I don't know a lot about their program, but it's
admittedly
not a draft pipeline, right?
No.
So, but yeah. I do wonder if these kind of arms, and Nick Nastrini kind of falls into this, you know, is kind of guy that never really put it together at UCLA, obviously a very big school. I do wonder if these kind of players, you know, the Yankees always get these guys, you know, guys that end up demoted to swingman their junior year or something, right? Directional Southern school, as Jarrett likes to say.
Yes.
I do wonder if these players, on some level, are more open to putting themselves in sort of the Dodgers player development system. Because they've seen failure, right? So if you're a Dodgers, you know, if you're their amateur cross-checker or their signing scout, or they get into the system and you're talking to the pitching developmental coordinator, like, look, we know you're good. And maybe they've struggled in college or gotten demoted and they're mad about it, or they didn't get along with their coach or whatever. I don't know. I'm projecting at this point. And they're like, we know you're good. Here are the things you need to do. Like, we know you're talented. And once you get that after struggling for the first time in your baseball career in a lot of cases, maybe you're more willing to get that buy-in, right? And that buy-in's important.
Yeah. That's the Carlos Rodon corollary right there, right, if you think about it, you know? So, absolutely. And that's a really fascinating way to think about it. Honestly, I haven't thought about it that way before. So,
I don't know. It's very half-baked, obviously.
Yeah.
But
I think, generally speaking, it does apply to some of those really smart teams because they're looking for the characteristics they can maximize rather than the totality of the prospect at that given time.
And look, a lot of college programs are the equal of Major League Pitching development at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of them aren't.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Wake Forest
yeah,
is up
sure,
there,
Wake
right?
Forest, yeah.
You know, a lot of programs are building
Vanderbilt,
labs that,
you know, Florida.
Yeah, Vanderbilt, you can, yeah, absolutely. You can go down the list of some of the major programs that not only are building these pitching labs, but are getting major league teams to ask them questions about their pitching labs and are going to seminars and getting questions from teams about this stuff. So absolutely. But let's dive into the top 10 here. It's got to be the deepest top 10 that we've covered yet.
I believe this has the most 101 names
on it. I think so.
It's either them or the Rays.
Yeah. It's going to be close between them. Yeah, that's going to be another fun list to go over. But
yeah,
Diego Cartaya, for all the talent in this farm system, is the clear number one, at least to me. And I think just knowing the way that you think about things and given the track record of Cartaya at this point, I think it's safe to say that he was a pretty clear number one over the rest of the crop here.
Sure. It's just the same top three from last year. We shuffled the order. It was Vargas, Cartaya, Miller last year.
Yep.
And, you know, the major thing for Cartaya, I think you could have argued last year, I don't know if I said this at the time, that Cartaya had the most upside of those guys. I don't actually even know that's still true, per se. But his issue last year was he really didn't stay healthy. He hadn't had a full healthy season yet. You know, he got that in 2022. And look, he's improving as a defender. To the point that, I mean, he's a big guy. Like, Brandon notes this in the blurb. We've noticed him. He's a big guy for a catcher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he's improving defensively. The receiving is getting there. I think he'll stick. The Dodgers are pretty good at developing catcher defense.
Yeah.
So I think he'll stick there. And then you look at this bat, and this is a potential, like, 30 home run catcher. And that just, you know, we'll get to another one later on the list, but this is not a common profile, right? You know, I had a scout tell me that he prepped Diego Cartaya over Francisco Alvarez, and I think you could make that argument.
I think there's absolutely a scenario where that's the case, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you think Cartaya is a better defender or even more likely to stick there generally, I think you can make that argument. But yeah, it's one of those ones where it's not an elite catcher profile, so they're always a little risky compared to some other prospect types. But
yeah, and this doesn't just apply to Cartaya; it applies to any defensively limited catcher. Let's say do you think that we as a site have accounted for the possibility of an automated strike zone enough in our rankings of catchers?
I don't know. And I don't. So there's like the threefold scenario here. No automated strike zone for whatever reason. I can't think of a good reason why there would be some sort of automated strike zone, because I think the league wants it. Yeah, maybe the umpires union puts up a particular fight about it, but the league's kind of set the precedent. They can just institute whatever rules they want willy-nilly. So,
right.
And that might end up being a labor issue. It might not. So then it's like, what kind of automated strike zone do you have? Because we've seen a couple different versions of this in the minors, right? So the PCL last year had full automated ball strikes, which is actually kind of hilarious at sitting at Salt Lake games. And I mean, the fans yell at the umpire because they don't tell you. There's no like announcement that says the game is being decided, but that strike zone is being decided by robots,
right?
So they still yell at the umpire, and you get weird ones like, you know, the curves that just like clip the bottom of the zone but like look low and things like that. So that's always funny. But then you have the Florida State League, which is a challenge system, which I think is the more likely scenario.
I don't
know why. It seems kind of silly if you basically admit that the automated strike zone is better. I don't know why you would make it a challenge system other than do like weird gamification stuff. And then it becomes, there actually is value there. I think there's still like, it tweaks the value of catcher framing, right? Cause you want to frame the pitches in such a way that the batter will not challenge them, I guess.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Like,
that's a great point.
This gets into like such granular stuff. I'm just like, is this guy a good defensive catcher or not? Let's just stay there. It's like the Galaxy Brain meme where it comes back around to just the first like smooth brain panel. Yeah.
Yes.
Like that's kind of just like, can he catch? I think he can probably catch. It's fine.
Yeah. But I mean, listen, if it ever gets to a fully automated strike zone, which, again, I don't think neither you or I actually believe that's going to happen. If that does happen, though, you're going to see guys like Hartaya and Alvarez increase infinitely in their overall upside because they're not going to be required to frame like that. He's a big guy.
It,
I think he's got
changes
enough arm
the entire.
It the
changes like setups, right? Like the one knee down.
Absolutely.
Setup will change, like blocking and three. You'll set up to throw and block more. Yeah. So there's all kinds of like knock on effects we don't know yet. So what I'm just gonna assume is that 2022 baseball will exist forever, and rank the prospects like that.
Number two, Bobby Miller. You know, this is the kind of profile that I love, and the Dodgers love this profile. And it's so easy to dream on a guy that throws with such a high-octane fastball. He can get it to 100 as a starter. The secondaries flash plus-plus at times.
Yep.
You know, and...
All three of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like... And it's just incredible where, you know, again, this is a late first-round pick that's turning out to be a guy that probably should have been taken in the top
five. Didn't really have a changeup in college either, and that's, like, might be his best secondary at this point.
Yeah. It's just more Dodgers player development magic, I guess you could call it.
We also say all that, and he posted a 4.25 ERA in the upper minors this year.
Yeah. I mean, the command is not great. And
this has always been my thing with Miller, and I get it. I've always gotten it, and I have kind of submitted to it this year, basically. But he just, and it's going to be true all the way down this list to varying degrees. All of these pitchers sacrifice a certain amount of control and command to just have incredible stuff on the scouting sheet.
Yeah.
And from the Dodgers' point of view, you know, you need two of them to work out and throw enough strikes. Maybe a couple more don't throw enough strikes, but they're good relievers. And you're just going to fill out the rest of your roster with your $300 million payroll, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Miller's... Look, I'd be sorely tempted, given what they've done or haven't done this offseason, just start Bobby Miller in their rotation next year. Like, is present Bobby Miller better than 2023 Noah Syndergaard?
Given how much they just gave Syndergaard.
Right, so there's that, yeah.
I don't think so.
And again, they can piggyback. The Dodgers are very comfortable throwing guys three to four to five innings. And
yeah, I mean, you could have a Syndergaard-Miller game if it's not close.
I want the Syndergaard-Dustin May game just for the aesthetics at some point.
Yes, it would be good for the brand, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, again, these are guys are boring to talk about. It's upper 90s touching 100. Both the slider and the curve are very, very good. The changeup does not look visually impressive, and that's something that's, I think, a refrain with a lot of these pitchers. It's, visually, it is not like the Johan Santana changeup, right? The pull the string, classic 15 miles an hour, slower than the fastball pitch. But again, analytically and just on basic outputs, guys swing and miss at it.
Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately what matters, right?
Right. And the breaking balls like look better than the changeup. But, and again, both of them are plus flashing better than that. As I say in the blurb, the fastball might be the fourth best pitch and he touches 100 with it.
Yeah.
Because it's a little too hittable.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing that I want to ask you, because, like, I think that as the Dodgers are working towards increasing the depth of a changeup for a pitcher or increasing the sweep on a slider, the downward action on a curveball, could you make the case that as they're optimizing their pitch design, that contrary to what we've thought about prospects all the time, like if you have command, you can build on your velocity and stuff afterwards. Is this essentially a gamble on the Dodgers trying to just get repetition for these guys with their new pitches, hoping that as time goes on, their command will get better.
So some of it's that. Some of it's I was talking with one of the smarter guys about pitching around, and he told me that command doesn't exist. It's not real. What we see is not essentially replicable, except at the extremes.
Okay.
The idea is that you just want stuff with good shape. Because nobody actually hits the glove.
Right, but you also don't want to throw a hellacious slider over the heart of the plate if you can control that, right? Like, you'd rather the outside part of the plate.
Yes, you would, but there's a lower and upper bound to this, right? In terms of, so you can walk 4 or 5 per nine if you're striking out 12 or 13 per nine and getting weak contact, which is sort of the gambit that all these Dodgers pitchers go through. I don't know that I agree with it. I believe it. It was a weirdly convincing argument in a way, but
yeah. Okay.
But then again, you look up and Bobby Miller had a 4.25 ERA in the upper minors. So
yeah, right. So, you know, look, people are always going to get excited because of the fastball. The fastball isn't even that particularly good. I wonder if maybe he starts to incorporate more of like a two-seamer, if you will, to see if maybe
he throws a sinker on occasion. And it's actually a pretty good pitch. So
that's what I'm. Yeah, like I have to imagine that's going to be the next developmental goal for Miller. Because look, and we'll move on after this last point, but this kind of goes back to what the really good teams do. It's not that everyone should be throwing a fastball in the upper part of the zone. What I think the Yankees have done, and I think the Dodgers are starting to do with some of their pitchers, if the sinker is what's really going to get the outs as the fastball type pitch, go with the sinker. Like, we don't care if your fastball is better or your sinker is better. Just throw your best stuff.
Right. So this is the, I mean, you know, I love talking about Dustin May. This is a classic example, right? When Dustin May was drafted, I mean, he was he was an analytics and a scouting pick, but he was a four seamer with great feel for spin, high spin, four seam, high spin curve. He came up as like a sinker cutter guy. And he started incorporating the four seam more and a more of a hybrid raking ball, really. It's not his original sort of amateur curveball, but that's what Dodgers do, right? It's like figure out what you can do well. And it's not just it's what you can do well given your mechanics and your release point and your extension and everything else, right? It's not just what you do well now. It's what we think you can do better in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Bobby Miller is going to be a fascinating case study for that, to see if the two-seamer sinker becomes a bigger point of emphasis for him. I think it will.
Miller himself did not, you know, again, it was a 2020 season, so he was a starter. He was going to be a starter his junior year, but he was not really like a swingman his first two seasons at Louisville.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately why he went so late in the first round.
Yeah.
But I think talent-wise, I don't think there's any discussion now. He is easily a top-5 pick in that draft now, if you have to go back. So number 3 on this list is Miguel Vargas. You mentioned he's number 1 on this list at this time last year. He has continued to blitz the minor league, if you will, because he made his major league debut last year. Super talented player. I mean, you watch him play, and it's so obvious. So the question to you is, why is he now number 3 after doing so well over the past couple of seasons and making his major league debut?
So this is just a case of, I think his stock is right where it was last year, and Miller and Cartaya just passed him. You know, again, this is like Cartaya playing a full season and showing a little more upside, and Miller pitching a full season and showing a little more upside.
Sure.
You know, Vargas is a high probability above average regular, but again, this is, we can talk about this with Vargas, talk about with Outman, Michael Bush, even some of the pitchers. They have a maybe surprisingly conservative track for their prospects.
Yeah. And not typical for other smarter teams, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, they can be selectively aggressive. And part of that is, like, look, there's just not room at the major league level in a lot of cases.
A good problem.
There just
have.
Isn't, right?
Yeah.
Now, you've seen what they've done with, you know, pitchers like, you know, Ross Stripling would be a starter anywhere else and has been a starter pretty much anywhere else. And,
yep.
You know, there was a time when Julio Urias was moved more as a swingman, 4 to 5 inning guy. So they have so much depth of talent. Like, you can look at it. Where's Miguel Vargas playing in 2023? Like, he's ready. He is ready to be an above average starter. And they might end up with a spot for him, depending on how they want to align their defense. You know, is it going to be like Chris Taylor at second and Muncy at third and Lux at short? But then you have
do they put him in
James
left
Altman
field
and Trace Thompson in the outfield. Yeah. They talked about Betts playing second, and Vargas has played a little bit everywhere. So it's just
where do you think he ultimately plays? I mean,
I think he would be fine at third. I think they would have definitely played him at second under the old shifting rules. I don't know if they will now.
Yep.
But I think he's not going to have a set position. He's going to hit. I think it's plus hit, plus power. And the plus power, you know, the plus game power, even if it's only maybe a little below that on raw, and like the exit velocities aren't great. I understand that. But I think his knowledge of the zone, his ability to make contact in the zone, is going to play power to 20 plus home runs, you know, assuming he gets like something resembling a 140 plus game schedule, which, again, it's the Dodgers. So. But you can't actually consider that part, I think, when you're writing the list.
I don't think you can consider that. But
I mean, I hate the term professional hitter in a lot of ways. But if you're going to call someone a professional hitter, it's Miguel Vargas, right?
Yeah,
he just
does
everything well.
Yeah, he's like we were going to say about that with Michael Brantley when he was coming up in the early 20-teens, right? Just a professional hitter.
He didn't have the pure hit tool that Brantley does, but I get the point.
No, but he does have that blend of hit tool without striking out.
He's probably about as good a left fielder as Brantley is nowadays.
Yeah, well, that's not saying much, frankly. But, I mean, we're still very high on Vargas. So,
right, and Vargas actually hasn't really... So there's, like, the thing, like, I don't think he's really moved that much on the 101, but... You would assume he would just go up on attrition. I don't know if I'm more down on him now. I think some of this is just I've kind of changed my broader philosophy on this kind of profile.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's going to be a top 50 prospect. I think he's a very safe, above-average regular. There's not as much upside as Miller and Cartaya is what it comes down to. Like, it's really hard to see like a Rule 7 outcome for him versus Miller and Cartaya. So I think that gets baked in a little bit. But again, I don't know offhand. I could pull up the document. We've locked the 101. But I would say that like Vargas and Miller are only maybe 10 spots apart, if that. So
yeah, and in that part of the list, it's not that's not a substantial difference at all.
Not this year, at least.
No. Last question about Vargas, and we'll move on to number 4 here. What are the percent odds that Vargas is actually in the Dodgers organization at the trade deadline?
I think they really like Miguel Vargas. I'm not saying they're not going to deal him as the second piece for Brian Reynolds or Rafael Devers, which are both deals they should consider.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think they really like Vargas. I think they would have to be sorely tempted to move him versus some other named on this list. I don't have any inside information here. This is just my sort of gut feeling.
Yeah, it's at least something to think about.
But like organizationally, he doesn't have the same fit as... You always need more pitchers, right? There's a lot of pitchers.
Yeah.
Up into the top 10. Do you move... I don't know if you move... Again, this is something weird. Thing. You move Vargas versus Bush in a similar deal. Let's contend what the acquiring team wants to, so there's a lot of moving pieces. But I think broadly speaking, they would like to keep Miguel Vargas, even if they're planning on him being like a 100-game, 400-at-bat guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a pretty significant role player right there for any team. So Yeah, very high on Miguel Vargas still. We're very, very confident he's going to be an above-average player at the major leagues. Gavin Stone, number four on this list, you could argue is one of the, again, another directional Southern school, yes, if you will. But this time in the Dodgers organization instead of the Yankees organization. But
That's an interesting philosophical question. Is central a direction, or is it the absence of direction?
You know, it's 9:30 on a Thursday.
We're not
night.
Equipped
Jeffrey,
to handle this right
we're
now.
Not
yeah,
answering,
we're 17 lists no, into the yeah. No, whatever. No,
we're not doing that. Get out of here with that. But I'm going to say directional, and you can comment in the comments if you want. Tell me how wrong I am. I don't care. Gavin Stone, though, he threw 121 innings this year, which is, you know, I feel like a lot for a pitcher these days. But that also gave us the opportunity to see just how impressive he is, given where he was drafted, given the not necessarily the high prospect tier that he was coming out of the draft. But again, this is the Dodgers maximizing a profile, and I'm not surprised at all to see him having taken this step and be number four on this list, frankly.
Yeah, it's one of like I'm kind of annoyed he's this high in a lot of ways because I think it was maybe like middle of the summer or something, and like I got Jarrett Seidler telling me Gavin Stone to be top 50 by the end of the year, and I'm like, come on, man!
Like you Jarrett says put, a lot of things.
You can't just this is like that. The you can't just point at every Dodgers prospect and say 101 guy meme yes. or whatever. Yes. And then I started doing video on him. And I'm just like, ah, fuck.
He's right.
Look. This is one of those things, too, where, like, visually, like, don't get me wrong, it's a really good changeup. But if I was just sitting behind home plate or watching a video and this one happened, it's like, okay, this is a really good, like, it's better than Pepio's, better than Andre Jackson's. Like, yeah, it's a 7. All right, fine. And then you look at the actual outputs on it. Like, if people swing at it, they don't hit it. And if they hit it, it's weak ground ball contact, either fair or foul.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's probably one of the best changeups in the minors, if not the best. And once he's in the majors, it's going to be one of the best changeups in the majors, if not the best.
Are you going to throw the number on it?
No. It's hard to argue it isn't elite, is what I said. I did the okay. lawyerly. I did the yes, lawyerly arguing. Yes. Can't argue a negative thing. Yeah.
If I needed a lawyer, I would have brought Jared on for this.
Yeah, fair
list,
enough.
So,
you know, again, it's mid-90s fastball with good vertical action. The command's not great, but whatever. The sliders, actually, he barely throws a slider. And the slider's interesting because, like, shape-wise, it's velocity and depth, it's very similar to the changeup. And the changeup goes right, and the slider goes left.
Yeah.
So I do wonder if that's more difficult for pitchers to deal with, especially or hitters to deal with, especially when he's throwing the slider a little bit sparingly, and you got to have that changeup in the back of your mind.
And I think you could make the argument that the really smart teams have done a better job of developing sliders than they have changeups.
Sure. I mean, like, Stone's just feel for the changeup is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like you've got the more difficult pitch already locked up. You know, yep, that's going to be a plus-plus pitch at the very least. Now you have the opportunity to build in that slider to complement the fastball and changeup. You know, similar to Bobby Miller, if he develops that two-seam sinker, for Stone, if he's able to use that slider a little bit more, it's going to elevate his profile even more. And
I could construct an argument for Stone over Miller if I really wanted to think about it hard. I don't think he has the same upside, but I think he's just more likely to be like, 20% better than league average starter for a number of years, just kind of set it and forget it, number three type, maybe a little better than that here and there.
And he's also higher up in the majors, up in the minor league ladder at this point. You know, that's
you could start with Gavin Stone in the major leagues this year if you wanted. He had a fairly long run out and but he spent some time in AAA at that point. You know, all these guys are like 23 too. So as I said, with the Dodgers kind of keeping their guys in at various levels for longer than you might otherwise think, but No, it's again, it's the issue is he was a small college reliever. This is the first year he's really had a long term starter's role with the requisite dominance, but man, it might have been the most dominant pitcher in the minors this year.
And moving on to number five, I'm going to sound like a broken record.
This
when
is
I go
just Bobby
these guys.
Miller, but not
it's
quite
another,
as good.
Yeah, it's another, yet another college arm who has a big stuff gain in the Dodgers farm system. I'm not shocked at this point. Like, you could put any pitcher in the Dodgers farm system, and if you told me that they had big stuff gains, I wouldn't be surprised at this point. Nick Nastrini, as you said, I don't think it's been as impressive as Stone and Miller, but still quite the accomplishment given he was a fourth round pick in the 2021 draft.
Yeah. Again, a four pitch guy, and you can, again, it's just, we're doing the multiplicity thing here, right? The command's a little worse than Miller, and the control is definitely worse than Miller. The fastball is not quite as zippy. It's a very good fastball. The changeup is very good, but not as good as Stone or really Miller at this point. And the breakers are more, 55 than sixes.
Yep.
That's fine. Again, great pitching prospect, right? I made a comment on Twitter with people complaining about the, I think it was Mad Dog Russo complaining that the Mets are not, the Mets fans don't like that they're just signing really good players, like, Hall of Fame level pitchers or guys that have been worth 40 wins before their age 28 season instead of developing prospects. And they do need to get better at developing prospects, right? Like, I'm not even talking, I said like the sixth best prospect in the system, which is pitching prospect, which is Nick Nastrini. Or sorry, not Nick Nastrini. Emmett Sheehan would be the best pitching prospect in the Mets system.
Yeah.
And that is a problem.
Like, very clearly.
Anybody, like Nick Nastrini is going to be in our 101. Like, any system would be happy to have this level of prospect. And again, anybody could have gets complicated, right? Because he was a fourth round pick.
Yeah.
Out of UCLA. And
signed for less than $500,000.
And a guy that you look at his amateur career, and he had almost a 7 ERA at UCLA his junior season.
Wild.
He walked 11 per 9. And look, his walk rate has not been good in the majors, but it has not been 11 per 9.
Nick Nastrini is the case against stat scouting in every way.
Sure. And then, like, I know what the Dodgers were looking at because I watched Nick Nastrini pitch this year. Yeah. But that's the thing, right? It's like anybody could have had Nick Nastrini in 2021. I don't know that everybody could have had Nick Nastrini on December 22nd, 2022.
Yes, that's a really, very good point, I think.
Whatever. It's four potential plus pitches, relief risk, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think this is the one guy of the group that we've talked about so far that does have considerable reliever risk, right? But even if he is a reliever, I think it's important to mention that we think he'd be a very good one at that. So
yeah, I think he's certainly close for them.
Yeah. I mean, I think any of these pitchers within their top 15, frankly, could close for them at any given time. Yes. Number six on this list, Dalton Rushing. It's pretty incredible. I think Dalton Rushing, I'd have to go back and look, but I think you could make the case that Dalton Rushing would be the number one prospect for at least a handful of the lists that we've already done. Is that fair to say?
Again, we just did this back with the Royals. He'd be number one on the Royals
list. He would be number one on the Royals, yes.
There's a few, right?
Yeah.
And again, this is whether it's scouting, you know, amateur scouting, analytics, or combination thereof. He has 1 year as a full-time catcher because he was backing up Henry Davis at Louisville before that. Mm-hmm. He played mostly first base in the Cape Cod League. And he's a perfectly fine catcher. He's not going to win a Gold Glove back there. His framing is a little stiff. The Dodgers are actually pretty good at developing this kind of catching prospect. And he is the prime example of what I said at the outset. He is going to generate high exit velocities and good loft from a very short left-handed swing, and he's going to pick his pitches very well.
Jeffrey, I have a question for you. Mm. And if you don't want to answer this question, you do not have to. Is he a better prospect than Henry Davis at this
point?
Look,
Jarrett wrote an entire piece about this, which I link in his blurb that you can read. On my personal pref list, having done both the Pirates and Dodgers list now, yes, I would pref Dalton Rushing over Henry Davis.
Oh, we went there. We did it. We got there.
They're going to be like 15 spots apart on the 101, and Henry Davis is going to be higher. But again, the 101 is not my pref list. So.
Yeah. It's funny because I think I agree
with
you.
I'm not even going to put up much of a fight here.
Well, I'm not going to fight
really
you on this.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Like, he's just really good. Like, I don't know what you want. Like, he's not a hard scout, as I like
no.
to say.
No, he's not. He's a above average hit tool plus power potential. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about OFP, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, OFP 6 at the number 6. I don't. It's hysterical. It's like
it is
comical.
Yeah.
It's comical. And number 7 on this list is Michael Busch, and
he's a former and now present again 101 guy himself, right?
Yes. Let me ask you, because we actually don't have the entire sheet filled out at this point. Is he the first OFP 55?
He is. Yeah, he's right on the line.
He is the first OFP 55.
He's the first OFP 55.
So this is where the Dodgers list really takes a nosedive, folks. but no, in all seriousness, Michael Busch, I feel like we've been talking about him for a long time.
We have, and he's another guy that's like, his profile, again, it's not a clear defensive home. This is kind of like Vargas too, right? He's played a lot of second base in the way the Dodgers like to deploy their second baseman. This is like a bat first profile. And he's seen it, and he's changed a little bit as a prospect, where I think he was more kind of like a 55-55 guy with a good approach for his first couple seasons or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's the last, like, he started to kind of sell out for power. And it worked, to be clear. It's hurt his batting average a little bit, but... You know, again, he's another guy that's going to hit probably 250, 260, good on base. He's going to hit the ball. Again, it's not like incredible exit. It's above average exit velocities.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
everything's going to come between, you know, 15 and 25 degrees on the launch angle. He's going to have a good hard hit percentage. All those things you like to see. The red ink on the Baseball Savant page, and he's not going to be a great defender, but you can put him in a second base or corner outfield or DH or first base, or and you'll get 15 to 25% better than league average production. That's going to be a little three true outs comfy, but you know, it's the math works, right?
Right, and I think the Dodgers have had a better version of this at the major leagues, but you know a similar type of profile in Max Muncy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, okay, it does feel a lot like a slightly lesser version of Muncy, because you know when Muncy was at the peak of his powers, you know you're talking about a guy that was 45% better than league average. I think you know Busch is probably more of like. If he hits his OFP of 55, you're probably looking at, 15 to 25% better than league average?
Yeah, I'm getting, like, peak Logan Forsythe vibes or something
That's a good comp. I like that comp. So, I mean, listen, an OFP 55 at number 7, again, it's hysterical. But, you know, Nick Frasso at number 8, I'm really intrigued by Nick Frasso because he was a guy that was drafted by the Blue Jays. They didn't know what they really had in him, and frankly, I don't think they've shown to have a track record with pitching development and pitch design, and I might get in trouble for that.
Yes.
But whatever. If you want to remove it, you can remove it. If you don't want to, that's fine. Yeah. So the Dodgers, meanwhile, had the opportunity to get him for Mitch White.
Yeah, they did.
And, Jeffrey, I'm reliably informed that if you're offered Nick Frasso for Mitch White, you should accept that 11 out of 10 times.
So this is another one where... So there's a few more caveats here, right? He had elbow surgery last year and did not pitch much this year,
mm-hmm.
which is a problem. He's one that just is not remotely visually impressive. It's like a super funky right-handed delivery. And you watch it, and I've seen a lot of pitchers. I've seen a lot of pitching arm actions. And I watch his pitching arm action. I'm like, okay, it's going to be three-quarter slot or a little bit below. Mm. And it pops up, which has got to be pretty brutal for the hitter. You know, it. And when it pops up, it's mid to upper 90s touching 100. And both his slider and change, again, not impressive visually. The slider especially is not impressive visually. And nobody can hit it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what is he doing? It's like, why are you swinging at that? It's just kind of like... It looks like he's almost spiking it. And guys just swing hard.
It's one of the weirder profiles, I think, that it I've is. Come across as a pitching prospect this offseason. But again, there's immense risk because he has not pitched much.
He's not pitched much. Right? It's an elbow injury. Again, high reliever risk. It might be 7 fastball, 6 slider, 6 change.
Yeah. Again, they got him for Mitch White.
And it's just, again, this is boring, right? It's like, he doesn't really... He actually throws a decent amount of strikes compared to the rest of this list. But, yeah, I don't... whatever, I'll spoil it. He's going to make the 101, too. To where we are at this point.
We are 8 spots in. They are going to have almost 10% of the 101 list.
Yeah.
Think about that. That's just...
Like, I know I sound a little, like... unhinge right now. Again, I'm in the middle of prospect list season. This is just what I sound like. I also have a 2-year-old that doesn't sleep, so
yeah,
it does not help. But
you have excuses.
This is just wild stuff to me.
It is.
And look, I've ranked. I don't know. This is not the best system I've ever ranked. It's probably not even the best system this year. I think the Orioles, with their top end talent, as I said, are gonna sneak it out on the org rankings. But I've never gone down a system like this. Where it's just watching the same pitcher over and over again. And they're all good. They're all good in vaguely similar ways. Again, it's not exactly, but a pretty good Venn diagram overlap in a lot of cases. And it just slowly drives you insane, basically, is what I think happens.
Ah, oh, God, the Dodgers. The Dodgers, ladies and gentlemen. Andy Pages, number 9, the Arizona Fall League.
We're back to just like 3 true outcomes corner bat. All right, we're just...
Yes, the Arizona Fall League superstar.
Take a deep breath, relax, exhale. a brief bit of normality. Yeah.
Jeffrey, do AFL stats mean anything? I know the answer to this question.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he had 240 in AA is probably more instructive here.
Yeah, yeah.
Look. He's a nice prospect. It's 30 home run potential. There were some warning signs this year in the profile. You know, Grant saw him in Texas League. I was kind of like, not really a good outfielder. His swing decisions aren't great. Again, when you hit 240 in AA, your swing decisions aren't going to be great. He's going to hit for a lot of power, I think. He's going to be kind of a 3 true outcomes corner bat that might not really fit in corner outfield spot, you know, especially for the Dodgers. Like, look, we don't consider this. He's not on CD Mookie Betts in right field, right? This is not happening.
Yeah. No.
So you worry that he might fall in kind of like the Edwin Rios category for them, where he ends up as a corner bench bat or something like that. Another
or
guy
trade
that
bait,
might be another know. Guy that might be trade bait. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think again, it's not the most exciting profile, but finding this much actualized game power in the upper minors as your ninth best prospect, I don't think it's anything to sneeze at.
No, absolutely not. I think on a lot of other lists, that this would be closer to the number five prospect, which
right. It's like, it's
I would
not
be a little
like,
bit uneasy
the
about.
The swing and miss isn't awful. For
no.
Them, right? He's running like 25% K rates. It's not.
That's
not
like
disaster,
very
right?
doable if you're yep. destroying the ball. I mean,
yep.
we were like. Let's put this
he's
in
the guy that's
like
a heavy fly ball profile in like the. The good launch angle zone. So
yeah, like he, like I remember back in the day, we were talking in 2019 about Miguel Sano, and I mean, I'm not comparing.
He does not have
to,
that kind of raw power,
right? You know, Sano has bigger raw power, 8-grade raw power, but he also strikes out way more. And we were wondering, like, is the power enough is to offset the K concerns? Whereas Pies probably has what would you give it like 7 raw power
yeah, sure,
at this point? 25% K rate at that point, I think, is like very doable. So, I'm going to be interested to see, like, is he going to be able to make enough contact as he continues to climb the minor league ladder, as he makes it to the major leagues? You know, that's going to be an interesting question. So that's going to be the one thing that I'm going to look at for Pajes moving into 2023. James Altman, we have a little bit more certainty about because he's already made the major leagues, similar to Miguel Vargas. But he was a guy that I think kind of snuck up on people this year, right? He wasn't necessarily a big-time prospect, but...
Yeah, we noted him as a factor on the farm last year,
yeah.
as I mentioned his blurb. And, like, yeah.
Yep.
And he got, look, he was a factor on the farm, right? He got to the majors, so... And he kind of still is because, I don't know. I mean, he might just be their starting left fielder as we record, but...
Yeah, it's not, I mean, not ideal.
It's not ideal, but also, like, it'll probably be fine. I was talking with Jared about this, because Altman really broke my brain, I think, is where I actually, like, lost it, was the James Altman. James Altman broke my brain, because I'd done so many of these bats and arms over the last couple weeks, and just, like, I went back and crunch the numbers, and he has a fairly average zone contact rate, a fairly average chase rate. He hits the ball above average hard, right? It's like, I expect his major league X to be like 91-115 or something.
Yeah, the
like
barrel
that.
Rate, what, 8-9%?
Yeah, whatever. He'll like everything like a little above average there. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And his like he, I was looking like he hits everything between like 18 and 22 degrees.
It's like, absurd.
Like, it's just absurd. Like it's just like it's almost robotic, right?
Yeah.
This is how like old basketball men feel about the corner three, I think. Where it's just like we have optimized this to the point that's just not fun to watch.
Yeah.
And, like, look, he's going to swing over breaking shit that drops below the zone. He might have a hole up, too. There's a little bit of uppercut to it. Like, we know, we've seen that. It's just, he's going to, as I said to Jared, like, he's just going to hit 270, 350, 480 every year.
Yeah.
He's never going to see a tough lefty because it's the Dodgers. And it's just, yeah. Yeah. This is what he is. This is what they can do.
It's absurd.
It's just, it is absurd, yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, James Altman at number 10, I have to imagine it was a close call between him and Ryan Pepiot at number 11 on this list.
I think
and honestly, I think you could have put a lot
12,
of other people.
It's Sheehan, too, I think. I just didn't want to keep ranking pitchers that look like that at this point.
Fair. Yeah.
Pepiot just doesn't, like, he can't quite, that's where sort of the command issues start to break for me because his fastball is a little bit hittable when he's not getting it right at the top of the zone to set off the changeup.
Right, where he misses, it becomes a mistake pitch that the hitter can capitalize on, whereas the pitchers ahead of him, if it's a mistake, it's a ball or it's a walk. Right, yeah. Less damage done. Yeah, that's a good point. So we have gone through the top 10, and I feel like it's odd because I don't think we should stop there, but we have for almost every other list.
Yeah.
So let's do this. Give me your personal cheese ball that may be outside the OFP 55 range, and we'll call it a show.
So, I can pick a lot of guys here, but
give me one arm and give me one back.
They're all like, the arms are all like broadly profiles we've already talked to death at this point. So I'm actually going to go with the Shemius Morales. Look, do I like taking a 2022 IFA arm? No, I don't. But he's an interesting one. He can throw strikes. I know it's the DSL, but that's kind of an outlier within this list. It's good feel for spin, although the actual like secondaries don't miss bats at the level you'd think. He's a 6'5" guy with a 6-foot release height.
Yeah.
And like a real good vertical access on his fastball too. I was talking with a scout about him. He's like, he's really interesting. I'm like, yeah, he's really interesting. The scout's worry was that the Dodgers might have already optimized him at 17. And like, he's not really missing bats in the DSL. So we'll see. He's a guy I think you can keep an eye on. It's low 90s fastball. There might be more. Again, he's 6'5", so there's some physical projection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would I be shocked if he's the next Emmett Sheehan next year? Or, no, not really. Mm-hmm. I would have picked one of their actual like Rancho arms, but you know, Bruns. I like Bruns. I liked Bruns last year. If his stuff's even near the zone, it's unhittable. But like at a certain point, if you're walking that many guys in the low minors, I worry about your viability.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same issue with Ronan Kopp, who's this big, tall drink of water lefty with two good breaking balls, but. Man, he walked 10 per 9 this year.
Yeah. Ronan Kopp is an OTP legend. I'm so sure, yeah. He will have that going for him, I think. All right. So we get it. These Dodgers, they're
going to be good for a while, folks.
Arm after arm after arm and bat after bat after bat. Give me one bat, though, outside the top 10 that might catch someone's eye.
So I'm actually going to go with their third round pick this year, Alex Freeland. Again, it's a optimized left-handed swing. He's a little more fluid than Outman. So maybe he hits like 280, 350, 450 instead of 270, 350, 480. probably a third baseman long-term. Like the actions just don't quite work as short. The arm's pretty strong. But I'm going to single him out because he's doing the full like young Matthew McConaughey in like Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
Wispy mustache and mullet look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome look.
It's a true like 80s baseball look, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good prospect too.
Yeah, that certainly helps. But if you've got a mustache, if you've got the facial hair like Alex Freeland has, and you're in the Dodgers system, you've got a good floor there for sure. Listen, I feel as if I feel bad that we're ending the podcast here because I feel like we could talk for another 15, 20 minutes.
I
got to
go grocery shopping, man. Like,
I know you do. And, you know, but listen, it's already been an hour and you're going to have the whole write up that you guys can look at. You're going to have the podcast. So, Jeffrey, thank you for coming on to talk about the Dodgers. We're going to have a few more podcasts coming up here to catch up on some that.
They will not be as interesting as the Dodgers.
Not as interesting unless you were the Rays or Orioles. Then you might get to that point. But thank you all again for listening to the Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network. We really appreciate you guys supporting the network and all the other shows that we have going on. And we hope each of you have a happy holiday season. And thank you all again for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.